Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 6, 2025. There's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline, Patriotic Practice, and the caption, Choir members involved in the Living Flag program rehearsed their 8-song set list at Muhammad Christian Church. It's year 20 of the musical tribute to veterans, with free admission shows scheduled for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Investigations rise threat. A copycat tried to shut school. Danville incident allegedly inspired it. A shooting threat made against the Rise Academy on Monday was attempted to get classes canceled after a similar event caused the Danville School District to send all students home earlier that day, police said. From what she told the investigators, she saw the school had been closed in Danville because of a threat. So she thought, I guess she might try to get out of school, said Rantoul Police Chief Tony Brown. Danville Police said that at around 8 a.m. Monday, staff reported receiving an anonymous call to the school district office. The unknown caller said school shooting 10 a.m. then hung up. The administrators decided to cancel activities and send students home, with dismissals beginning at around 8:45 a.m. after a soft lockdown, as district staff and school resource officers continued investigating the call and determining the credibility of the threat. Danville Superintendent John Hart shared a letter with families in the district that afternoon, saying the decision to close all of the schools was made out of an abundance of caution. At around 3:48 p.m. that day, the Rantoul Police Chief Department and Rantoul City Schools were notified of a special media post containing a threat against Rise Academy that was deleted within minutes of being published. Brown told the News Gazette that the post was made in a Facebook group called Rantoul Community Uncensored, and that it said, I'm going to shoot up Rise tomorrow, watch your backs. The account that made the post was not connected to the name of a real person. Brown said one of his department investigators has a contact in the FBI, who they were able to reach out to for advice on how to proceed. The FBI contact also was able to help confirm some of the same information Rantoul Police investigators found. Rantoul Police do work with the FBI on occasion, depending on the nature of any individual case, Brown said. It's not every day, but we do regularly work with them, he said. With that assistance, Rantoul Police contacted Facebook with an emergency records request. In many cases, such as when a gathering of evidence for a trial, police need to subpoena the social media site for information. Since this was an emergency request regarding a potential act of threat, Brown said Facebook returned information about the account owner within a few hours. Officers then responded to the address and interviewed the juvenile before the end of the day. Brown said that the decision to close school or leave it open is up to the school district, but factors including the nature of the threat itself and how it was delivered would have been considered. Future Farmers of America, Blue Ridge chapter among top 10 in the U.S. Instead of a king-sized candy bar, the Blue Ridge High School FFA chapter found a bigger treat this past week, its first national title. The national FFA group winnowed down its list of more than 9,400 chapters to choose top 10 recipients of the Model of Excellence Award. Chapters chosen are seen as those that best represent the organization in its goals through work in strengthening agriculture, building communities, and growing leaders. The Farmer City chapter isn't a stranger to high praises. The school has consistently maintained a 3-star rating since 2020. This year, only 39 Illinois chapters received the highest honor. Students earned their learned their chapter had received the recognition on the first day of school. Jacqueline Meisner, the advisor, said that despite the award, this year didn't feel abnormal. When I first learned about the model of excellence, I was very, very shocked, and I couldn't honestly believe it, Meisner said. The convention welcomed both students and advisors with workshops, seminars, and networking with people across the country. The group left Farmer City in a transit van on Tuesday night for Indianapolis, since they planned to compete. The Blue Ridge chapter focused heavily on the presentation this year. Three Blue Ridge members gave a 15-minute private presentation of 9 activities that benefited the community, school, and chapters. They discussed events such as holding a banquet to recognize members with at least a 3.0 grade point average, advocating for continued support from their school board, hosting a petting zoo to teach elementary students, and organizing a career fair for the entire high school. The chapter will soon finish its collaborative project with Clinton's FFA program to promote shopping at local businesses in DeWitt County. At partnered local businesses, shoppers can get a card punched, and once full, be entered in a raffle. From Presley Hardesty's point of view, the model of excellence added to the satisfaction of creating the community events. The chapter's vice president couldn't be prouder of the group's work. As an officer who helps plan the events, it means a lot, she said. Whenever you do the event, you see how successful it ran. But to make it to national, it shows how successful we are compared with other chapters. While the students answered questions from judges, the rest of the chapter and their advisors watched the live stream that their school recorded on phones in the hallway outside. The 10th year advisor, Meisner, couldn't hold still, both from anxiety and excitement. I'm kind of a pacer when my kids are competing, she said. I would stop and listen and be overwhelmed by how professional they sounded. You could definitely tell the passion and love they had for the program. Seeing her students take ownership of their presentation and watching them walk on the national stage was all I need as an advisor, she said. The entire chapter traveled to Indianapolis for the award ceremony to celebrate. The Blue Ridge group took a break from the convention Friday to celebrate Halloween with a visit to the Indianapolis Zoo, where they trick-or-treated at different animal exhibits. The community and first responders welcomed the group home Saturday for a job well done. Hardesty said after the successful week-long convention, she needs to catch up on sleep. I feel very fulfilled just going on the stage. Even though we didn't win first, she said, I feel like we did our best, and it was an incredible experience. And there are also 2 photos, one showing the chapter in a photo where they're all gathered together, and the other showing them at Zooboo at the Indianapolis Zoo. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Carrying on the impressive Living Flag program at Mahomet Christian Church is not without its challenges. The change has not been with the desire or the passion of the people doing this, said the music program's Stephanie Graham, a contributor since day one. What's changed is that patriotism has become less cool. It's not popular, not fashionable. Year 20 of the Living Flag program, a musical tribute to veterans that features an elaborate setup, takes place at 7 p.m. Friday, 2 p.m. Saturday, and 4 p.m. Sunday at the church. Donations collected at the free event will benefit Shea Veterans Center at the University of Illinois. Speaking this year, Samantha Fair, daughter of Living Flag founder David Johnson, who passed away in 2022. More than 75 volunteers make it happen, including a choir of 25 who will deliver an uplifting set list of 8 tunes. We continue to deliver a good program from people who love the country, but it's become challenging because of the environment, Graham said. The energy is still there, and we love doing it. Teacher of the Week is Mallory Christ from 3rd grade Atwood Hammond Grade School. After graduating from Eastern Illinois University 18 years ago, Mallory Christ returned to her hometown to take a year-long substitute position at Atwood Hammond High School. The next year she moved to Atwood Hammond Grade School, where she's taught third grade for the last 16 years. In addition to engaging her students, Christ goes above and beyond, organizing monthly teacher potlucks and helping craft the schedules for music, art, and PE. She goes above and beyond each and every day for our students and staff, Principal Chris Foreman said. Mallory is able to balance all of the needs and requests with ease. I often tell her she would make an amazing administrator, as her gifts with students and parents would suit that role extremely well. However, she is happy and content where she is, and as her boss, and selfishly, I am too. I find my work important because as a teacher, I have the privilege of shaping young minds and helping them to become successful members of society. There is so much more than a teacher does than teaching core subjects. I get to teach them skills that will last a lifetime. I want all my students to be better humans, and I hope they leave my room at the end of each day better than the day before. My role as a teacher is vital, and I try my best never to take that for granted. I became a teacher because I wanted to look back someday and say I made a difference. What a better way to do that, to become a teacher so I could teach, love, and care for the children of our future. Being able to teach in the same school district my own children attend and having summers off with them is an added bonus. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is not necessarily one particular lesson, but the most satisfying thing I teach as a third grade teacher is multiplication. I love showing my students multiple strategies that can be affected with, as well as helping them to memorize their facts. They earn karate belts and work to become a multiplication fact master. Seeing them work hard in this area always makes me proud. I know that knowing these facts is going to make them more successful in math throughout their education. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when I make connections with my students to help them have more achievements in their learning. I love when my students take ownership of their learning and want better for themselves. I enjoy when students want to be pushed further, and seeing them succeed is pure joy to me. In a world where social media can be such a negative thing, as a teacher I see it so differently. I get to see my former students as young adults with careers and families of their own, out there in the world being successful good humans. That is what this is all about. I keep students engaged by adding hands-on activities when possible, staying consistent and clear with expectations, and moving through material at a rate that is appropriate for them. Candy and snacks are always helpful, too. Something else I'm passionate about is spending time with my family. Whether it is attending a sporting event, hunting, camping, or swimming in our pool, being with my husband and our kids is my happy place. Reading is my other passion. You will often find me with my Kindle in my hands or my AirPods in listening to a book. My family says I have the ability to drown out any background noise and can read anywhere. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Wolf. She went above and beyond to help me become a more successful reader. She is the reason I am a teacher today. One of the most amazing things about my career so far is that I go to eventually teach across the hallway from her. I had the privilege of learning from her as a student and as a colleague. My two favorite high school teachers were Mrs. England and Mrs. Gardner. They were so good at what they did and knowledgeable in their subject areas. They were also best friends, and when I went into teaching, I knew I needed to find a place where I could have that as well. Teaching is a hard profession, and being able to spend your days with friends who understand what you're going through is essential. I am beyond blessed in this department at the Atwood Hammond Grade School. If I weren't a teacher, I would be a professional organizer. I find decluttering and organizing so satisfying, and to get paid for doing it would be amazing. I would also really enjoy being an audiobook reader. Capital News, Illinois. Legislature passes medical aid in dying bill that governor says he will review. Terminally ill adults in Illinois may have the option to take life-ending medication prescribed by a physician under a bill passed by the Illinois legislature last week during its fall session. Advocates for the bill say it is rooted in compassion and will bring agency to already dying people in the last stages of life, while opponents cite religious concerns and potential harm to vulnerable populations. The Senate voted 30-27 to pass Senate Bill 1950 in the early morning hours on October 31st, after the House passed it 63-42 in May. The legislation needs only the governor's signature to become law, and if signed, would take effect after 9 months. The bill received support from advocates like Susie Flack, formerly of Chicago, who has pushed for the legislation in honor of her son, Andrew, 34 at the time of his death from cancer in 2022. Andrew chose to live in California and utilize the state's medical aid in dying options, which were not available in Illinois at the time. He is one of several advocates named in the bill text. Inevitably, losing a child is the hardest thing that anyone could go through, I believe. Flack said, I am just comforted every day by the way his death was so peaceful. He had some control over things. The bill sets specific requirements for eligibility to receive end-of-life medication. Patients must be Illinois residents, 18 or older, who have a terminal disease that is determined by two physicians to result in death within 6 months. A diagnosis of major depressive disorder does not alone qualify patients for end-of-life medication. Patients requesting treatment must make both oral and written requests for aid in dying. A physician would then need to elevate the patient's mental capacity and evaluate potential sources of coercion or undue influence and inform the patient of alternative hospice care and pain control options before writing a prescription for life-ending medication. Those who qualify must be able to self-administer the medication, as no one else is permitted to administer it to them. Patients also qualify and receive medication have the right to withdraw their request at any time or choose not to ingest the medication. Death certificates of those who take end-of-life medication under the bill will attribute their cause of death to the underlying terminal disease, not suicide. Bill sponsor Linda Holmes, Democrat Aurora, said the Senate floor that there are over 20 guardrails in place to prevent coercion and abuse, pointing to Oregon's 28-year history of providing medical aid and dying care. In the years that this has been in effect in Oregon, starting in 1997, there have been no substantiated cases of coercion or abuse, Holmes said. Including Oregon, 10 states and the District of Columbia have legalized medical aid in dying. Illinois would be the first Midwestern state to do so. After another stint as interim boss, Tyler Funk appointed chief. A longtime veteran of the Champaign Fire Department has served as an interim chief on more than one occasion, is stepping into this role on a permanent basis. City Manager Joan Walls has appointed Tyler Funk to serve as the city's next fire chief, effective November 19th. Chief Funk is an exemplary public servant who will be central to our fire department's future growth, Walls said. A strong and seasoned leader, Chief Funk is not only well-respected throughout the state, but he is also the right chief at the right time to lead the current and next generation of our fire department. Chief Funk is dedicated to this city, forward-thinking, community-focused, and results-oriented. Walls previously appointed Funk interim fire chief starting July 14th amid Andy Quarmstrom's departure to serve as Savoy's village administrator. Before that, Funk worked with the department for 26 years and rose to the rank of deputy fire chief before retiring in 2023, city officials said. His career included serving as acting fire chief during the city's COVID-19 emergency response from 2020 to 2021 as fire marshal from 2019 to 2023. The level of talent and professionalism within the Champaign Fire Department is truly inspiring, Funk said. I will proudly support our distinguished firefighters and amazing staff, and together we will continue to build upon the department's proud tradition of excellence, service, and safety for Champaign's residents. Funk also taught incident command system training at the department for several years and was a member of the state's MABAS deployable hazmat team. Before joining the department in 1997, Funk was a Department of Defense firefighter with the Army at Fort Bragg in North Carolina from 1992 to 1996. FFA reducing air traffic to maintain safety. Controllers have been working unpaid since October 1st. The Federal Aviation Administration said Wednesday that it would reduce air traffic by 10% across 40 high-volume markets beginning Friday morning to maintain safety during the ongoing government shutdown. The reduction stands to impact thousands of flights nationwide because the FAA directs more than 44,000 flights daily, including commercial passenger flights, cargo planes, and private aircraft. Air traffic controllers have been working unpaid since the shutdown began October 1st. With some calling out of work, staffing shortages during some shifts had led to flight delays at a number of U.S. airports. Citing growing staffing pressures, FAA Administrator Bryant Bedford said the agency would not wait for a crisis to act. "We can't ignore it," he said. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy and Bedford said they would be meeting Wednesday with airline executives to determine how to safely implement the reduction in flights. Until then, both declined to name the affected markets. Bedford said a list would be released sometime Thursday. "If the pressures continue to build, even after we take these measures," Bedford said, "we'll come back and take additional measures." The Associated Press on Wednesday sent requests for comment on the FAA's decision to major U.S. airlines, including Delta, United, and American Airlines. Southwest Airlines said it was evaluating potential impacts to its schedule and would reach out as soon as possible to customers whose travel plans may be impacted. "We continue to urge Congress to immediately resolve its impasse and restore the national airspace system to its full capacity," the carrier said. The FAA sometimes slows down or stops flights from taking off toward an airport due to weather conditions or when there aren't enough controllers and other personnel for facilities are unable to pick up the slack. Last weekend saw some of the worst staffing shortages of the shutdown, which became the longest on record early Wednesday. From Friday to Sunday evening, at least 39 different air traffic control facilities announced there was some potential for limited staffing, according to an Associated Press analysis of operations plans sent through the Air Traffic Control System Command Center. The figure, which is likely an undercount, is well above the average for weekends before the shutdown. During weekend periods from January 1st to September 30th, the average number of airport towers, regional centers that oversee multiple airports and facilities that monitor traffic at higher altitudes, announced the potential for staffing issues was 8.3, according to the AP analysis. But during the 5 weekend period since the shutdown began on October 1st, the average was then tripled to 26.2 facilities. Dubious on tariffs, justices appear skeptical about Trump's assertion of near limitless power over import duties. A majority of Supreme Court justices seemed skeptical Wednesday about President Donald Trump's ability to unilaterally impose far-reaching tariffs, putting at risk a cornerstone of his agenda in the biggest legal test yet of his boundary-pushing presidency. Three conservative justices raised questions about whether an emergency law gives Trump near limitless power to set and change duties on imports, with potentially trillion-dollar implications for the global economy. The court's three liberal justices also appeared dubious, so at least two conservative votes could limit Trump's tariff power under the law. It likely would not end it altogether, however. The case is the first major piece of Trump's agenda to come squarely before the nation's highest court, which he helped shape by naming three of the nine justices in his first term. The conservative majority has so far been reluctant to check his extraordinary flex of executive power in short-term orders in cases ranging from high-profile firings to major federal funding cuts. That could change with a more detailed ruling in the tariff case, although it will likely take weeks or months to come down. The Constitution says Congress has the power to levy tariffs, but at a first, the Trump administration argues that an emergency law allowing the president to regulate importation also includes imposing tariffs. Justice Neil Gorsuch appeared concerned that could shift too much congressional power to the president on an issue that helped spark the American Revolution. It's a one-way ratchet toward the gradual but continual accretion of power in the executive branch and away from the people's elected representatives, he said, later suggesting the power to reach into the pockets of the American people must be done locally through our elected representatives. Chief Justice John Roberts raised questions about whether the emergency power law allowed for tariffs on any product from any country in any amount for any length of time. Justice Amy Coney Barrett also expressed the government on the broad range of Trump's action. Spain, France, I mean, I could see it with some countries, but explain to me why as many countries needed to be subject to the reciprocal tariff policy. Regulating commerce or raising money. Solicitor General D. John Sauer said lopsided trade deals are a global problem, and Trump's tariffs are primarily about regulating foreign commerce to be fairer rather than raising money that could encroach on Congress's taxation power. The fact that they raise revenue is only incidental, he said. Within hours, though, Trump said his tariffs would help slash the deficit. My tariffs are bringing in hundreds of billions of dollars, he said in a speech to business leaders in Miami. Trump has called the case one of the most important in the country's history and said a ruling against him could be catastrophic for the economy. The arguments were about two sets of tariffs. The first came in February on imports from Canada, China, and Mexico after Trump declared a national emergency over drug trafficking. The second involves the sweeping reciprocal tariffs on most countries that Trump announced in April. Multiple lawsuits have been filed over those tariffs, including a case from a dozen largely Democratic leading states and another from small businesses focused on everything from plumbing supplies to women's cycling apparel. They argue the 1977 Emergency Powers Law Trump used doesn't even mention tariffs, and no president before has used it to impose them. Lower courts have argued that the tariffs were on an illegal use of the 1977 International Emergency Economic Power Act, or EPA, although some appeals court judges did side with the Trump administration and found the law gives the president broad power. Who pays the price? At the Supreme Court, much of the argument centered around the legal principle known as the Major Questions Doctrine. It doomed some signature policies of former President Joe Biden, including his $500 billion student loan forgiveness program. The challengers say Trump's tariffs should get the same treatment since they'll have a much greater economic impact, raising some $3 trillion over the next decade. The government, on the other hand, said the tariffs are different because they're a major part of Trump's approach to foreign affairs, an area where the courts should not be second-guessing the president. Justices like Brett Kavanaugh seemed receptive to that argument. So you're forcing the president to respond to an emergency, and you're taking away the president's suite of tools, he said. That just seems a bit unusual. Roberts also seemed concerned about going too far in restricting the president's foreign powers. This is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 6, 2025. Please stay tuned for Part 2.